everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. A friend of mine called tonight and said about 20 minutes ago, "Hey, you should have heard O'Reilly tear you a new body part on his program tonight." So no sooner did Jack tell me that than all of a sudden I start getting the 3 or 4 or 6 emails, F you Malloy, you communist, you Muslim, you faggot. It happens every time. Every time one of these right-wing weasels uses me, you know, and my little 25-star radio program, it's just amazing. You guys really have to reach. See, I provide cover for everybody else on the liberal left. But every time it happens, and it's usually the same clowns, most of whom have had their email addies blocked. But it's so much fun to read the vile hatred of these Christian white males. Every single one of them is a Christian white male. So anyway, mucho funo. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? This hour is sponsored by Robin Horden, and he has a message. He says, this is brought to you by Robin Horden and 9/11 Truth for World Peace and Justice. The U.S. government lied to us about 9/11. Visit the World 9/11 Truth website, world911truth.org, and demand publicly funded elections using hand-counted paper ballots. Insist on a federal voting holiday. Let's do it now. world911truth.org. Oh, and please also visit ciatavism.org. The A in CIA is the first letter in activism. ciactivism.org. There you go. All right. Thanks, Robin. Where are we? We haven't even mentioned this. The natural disasters that are occurring around the globe right now. I listened to a climatologist on one of the programs tonight, stated very simply, very succinctly, global warming is not a prediction. It is based on science. It's not going to happen 50 years from now. It's happening now. Global warming has caused this horrendous increase in volume of moisture, water, atmospheric water. And the result have been torrential rains, these heavy snowstorms, the flooding in South America, in Australia, in Southeast Asia, just about all over the planet. And there's more coming. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, it's going to be a monster of a summer, and this is not just a precursor to what's coming. It's here. It's here. We've ignored the science. We've decided to stick our heads firmly up our rectums and pretend there is no such thing. Too many people have listened to the Republicans and to the deathmongers like Palin and Beck and Limbaugh, you know, the usual crew, the pro-death party, and so it's here. It's here. And Jeff wrote a wonder about Blue regarding the Queensland floods. I haven't been able to listen every day, so I don't know if he has called in with a flood report, which he hasn't. The flood news here is nonstop and heartbreaking. Example, mom and son winched from car roof in torrent. Chopper goes back to get dad. He's gone. Or mom and dad help kids up higher into roof space. They look down to see first floor swirling with floodwaters and neither parent. Many, many of these stories. It is Australia's Katrina. But then we hear that 400 people die in Brazil due to landslides. A hint of things to come as climate crisis worsens. When did the warnings begin, Kathy? It was back in the 80s, wasn't it? About 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And people decided, nah, ain't happening. Nah, that's just those liberals. They're just trying to bring socialism. That's all. They're just those liberals trying to bring socialism. Well, here you are. Leave it to the pig man. In Tucson, have you seen this billboard? It's a huge black billboard, and in white letters, Rush Limbaugh, straight shooter, News Talk 790, KNST, And the billboard is full of huge bullet holes. You see this, Kathy? Look at that. Isn't that nice? That's in Tucson. That's in Tucson. They have a website, 790KNST.com. You might want to send him an email. Rush Limbaugh, straight shooter. Way to go, pig man. Way to go. Choke on your neck fat, you rancid, filthy, right-wing freak. Straight shooter. Mm-hmm. This is kind of interesting. a tweet from Sarah Palin, USA. Now, you can find it in its original form on Bart Cop, January 11th and 12th. That would be, what's today, 13th? Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. Go to Bart Cop, BARTCOP.com, BartCop.com, and you'll see the original tweet. Here's what it says. Remember months ago, bullseye icon used to target the 20 Obamacare-loving incumbent seats. We won 18 out of 20. 90% success rate. Tain't bad. Jack in Salem, Oregon writes, Mike, I'm somewhat astonished that as yet no one has pointed out that Sarah Palin's hypocritical and narcissistic statement constitute a complete repudiation, or is it refutiation, of every single thing she has said over the previous 2.5 years, beginning with her first national public appearance. She began pouring out vitriol, vituperation, and slanderous personal attacks against Democrats and liberals in general, and Obama and others in particular, in her acceptance speech. And over all the time in between then and the tragedy in Tucson, she has kept up the slanderous attacks expressed in terms of violence. Over all that time, she has echoed the most vicious blasts of the right-wing attack machine, aping Beck, Rush, Savage, O'Reilly, and adding some particularly nasty touches of her own. But now she takes it upon herself to excoriate liberals, Democrats, and political pundits for what she terms as personal attacks upon her and all her fellow slanderers and threateners. This particular form of self-contradiction is a hallmark of the sociopathic personality. For a sociopath, one's actions of yesterday do not exist, did not exist, and therefore can have no relation to one's actions of the present moment. What was said yesterday is irrelevant to what one desires to say today. The only criterion used in selecting language to use at any given moment is, will it serve my purpose at the present moment? A sociopath sees no contradiction between saying yesterday that one's political opponents are traitors and terrorists who should be hunted down and killed, and then proclaiming today that those same opponents must refrain from using violent and accusative language. There's no contradiction because, to a sociopath, only the sociopath's personal needs and wants have any real existence and truth, if truth is considered at all, and is defined as that which will advance the sociopath's purpose at the moment. This really is how sociopathology works. And because there is an essential human element missing from this type of personality, they not only do not think that they are doing wrong, they cannot even think in terms of right or wrong, unless the concept is expressed in terms of what will or will not serve their own personal needs and wants. Watch out for such contradictions coming from the right-wing hate machine. Where they appear, they give evidence of a dysfunctional and incomplete personality which cannot comprehend the concepts of good and evil, except insofar as they serve to furnish words for exoriating the honest, the decent, and the admirable among us. Jack in Salem. But don't ever forget the fallen. Keep all the lies lost in your heart, soul, and wallet. We will rebuild our nation without hesitation and continue to live with strong freedom, preservation. Light a candle and gather. There's a presence he felt. We will overcome the heartaches and watch the evil melt. In a world full of hate, in a world full of greed, what we need is to stand together in unity. In a world full of hate, in a world full of greed, just believe, cause peace will come eventually. In a world full of hate, in a world full of greed, never let go of hope. You can still achieve your dreams in a...
get your news unfiltered, only with Mike Malloy.
From the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from
21 past the hour. By the way, if you haven't signed up yet, I have a personal Twitter account. Aside from that of the Malloy Show, it is No Flying Monkeys. No Flying Monkeys. So tell your friends. You know, it never stops. How often do we say that on this program? Never stops. A California man was arrested yesterday on a charge that he made threatening, obscene phone calls to the office of U.S. Representative Jim McDermott shortly before a gunman shot Representative Giffords and others in Arizona. An FBI complaint unsealed in federal court said Charles Turner Haberman, with two N's, 32 years old, of Palm Springs, called the Seattle Democrats' office December 10th and left two messages, each about 4 minutes long, after seeing him on television. He began each message with his name and phone number, and then went on to threaten to kill the congressman, as well as his friends and family, over McDermott's opposition to extending tax cuts for the wealthy. That's according to transcripts recited in the complaint. Mr. Haberman faces one count of threatening a federal official, which carries up to 10 years in prison. Haberman also previously threatened an unnamed congresswoman, listed in the complaint as CP, and a California assemblyman, according to the FBI. Willie Rich, a spokesman for Representative CP, Shelley Pingree, declined comment because of the investigation. According to the transcript of one call to Representative McDermott's office, Haberman said, quote, "He thinks he can steal money from people and give it away to losers and get away with it. I'll expletive hunt that guy down and I'll expletive get rid of him." Huh? Another Beck listener. Oh, that's one of Neil Bortz's favorite lines, too. The tax man cometh and taketh everything. Taxes! God damn it! Of course, Neil Bortz would be one of the first whiners here in Georgia to complain about the fact that most of our roads here are still impassable. I think they now have Interstate 75, 85, 20, and 285 finally open to interstate traffic. But secondary roads, streets, neighborhoods, subdivisions, chock-a-block with ice. You know why? Because there's no money. You know why? Because Georgia is in the crapper. You know why? Because of years of Republican policies nationally and here in the state of Georgia. How about in your state, truth seeker? And like I tweeted today, to all you rand heads and neocons, you got a problem? Get out and clean your own goddamn street. What? You don't have a front loader? Oh, my. Try using your bootstraps. So, Charles Turner Haberman, threatening death to a member of Congress. Gee, do you suppose he means it? Let me ask you something, Truth Seeker. When was the last time you heard of a liberal, progressive, Democrat, independent, I don't know, somebody's going to say, Lawner was an independent. When's the last time you heard of someone with a sane, clear mind? that immediately eliminates all Republicans, all conservatives, and all right-wingers. Call and threaten a member of Congress? A member of the administration? How many people challenged the credentials of George W. Bush to serve as president? He wasn't elected. Where were these disgusting, filthy teabaggers? Oh, that's so old. Never mind. Who the hell cares? All right, we have a break coming. We'll be back. We have a lot of stuff to cover, and at some point this evening, it would be great fun to open up the lines and take some calls. We just might do that. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
On O'Reilly!
To practice your synchronized screaming, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Here's another reason to go to BartCop.com. I tried to get the screenshot of from the Arizona Secretary of State that showed the voter registration of Jared Lee Loeffner, 7741 North Soledad Avenue, Tucson. He is a registered Republican, as affirmed by the Pima County, Arizona Clerk of Courts. Greg Patton in Florida sends me the reminder that you can see it at BartCop, B-A-R-T-C-O-P, BartCop.com. There it is. He was a registered, of course, a lot of crap was put out there about, oh, he's a Democrat. Oh, he's an independent. Go look yourself. Go to BartCop.com. This hour is sponsored by Robin Horton. He has a message. Robin Horton and 9/11 Truth for World Peace and Justice sponsor this. The U.S. government lied to us about 9/11. Visit the World 9/11 Truth website. It is world911truth.org and demand publicly funded elections using hand-counted paper ballots. Insist on a federal voting holiday. Let's do it now. world911truth.org. And please also visit ciciactivism.org. Thanks, Robin. I wonder if how many nutballs are going to crawl out of the woodwork now in Illinois. God knows they have them. Not as many as we have here in Georgia, but especially in the southern part of the state. I'm sorry, it's just the truth. I lived there for 3.5 years. I didn't know about hate mail until I worked at WLS in Chicago, the only liberal on that right-wing sewer of lies and distortions. But I learned. That was a long time ago. That was 98, 99, 2000. I didn't know what I was walking into when I went up there. I thought, you know, Chicago? Illinois, labor capital, Bughouse Square, liberals, Northwestern. Oh, well. Illinois lawmakers have approved, and I like the headline, the Associated Press says, Illinois lawmakers approve 66% tax hike. How's that for a headline? Illinois lawmakers approve 66% tax hike. And you have to get to the third paragraph until you get to this. The increase now goes to Democratic Governor Pat Quinn, who supports the plan to temporarily raise the personal tax rate to 5%, a two-thirds increase from the current 3%. Corporate taxes would also climb as part of the effort to close a budget hole that could hit $15 billion this year. 66% tax hike! Scream! Yell! Oh my God! Look at that! Yeah. It goes from 3% to 5%. Now, of course, but the screaming headline, you have to get to about the 30th chamber, or the 30th paragraph, until you come to this. Democrats countered that even with the increase, Illinois' tax rate will be lower than many neighboring states. Iowa's top rate is 8.98%. Wisconsin's is 7.75%. They also maintain that without more money, state government may not be able to pay employees by the end of the year. Major government services might have to be halted, and groups waiting for state payments will go under. 66% tax hike! Oh, my God! Yeah, from 3% to 5%. You see how this works? Now, the article goes on and on. But it means that an Illinois resident who now owes $1,000 in state income taxes, and that would mean $1,000 is 3% of what? $300,000? No. I can't think. Somebody, quick, do the math for me. $1,000 is 3% of what? I can't just stop the program and do the math, and I don't have a computer. $1,000 is 3% of what? What would it be? $300,000? That seems a little high. Oh well. Anyway, it means that any resident, Illinois resident, who now owes $1,000 in state income taxes will pay $1,666 at the new rate. After 4 years, the rate drops to 4%, and that same taxpayer will then owe $1,333. So, for $2 a day, the average Illinois taxpayer, for $2 a day, gets to keep state government running and all the attendant services. Of course, the bagger freaks would tell, 66% tax increase! You know what I say? Don't sign it, Democratic governor. Don't sign it. You don't have to veto it. Well, here in Georgia, if you don't sign it, don't veto it, becomes law after 10 days or something. Maybe what the governor should do is just go ahead and veto it. Just veto it. And then let the state crash. You teabag bastards, I will be so glad when you are finally devoured by the tidal wave of history and you don't exist anymore. All those phony punks and punkuses you sent to Washington, D.C. Huh? How do you like what they're doing to you so far? Well, we changed our mind on that $100 billion that we were going to cut. It's actually 30, well, you know,
Never mind. We're here and you're not. Though there.
Howard writes, Mike, why the hell is President Obama doing an interview with O'Reilly during the Super Bowl? If you could shed some light on this, it would be appreciated. Thanks, Howard. I have no idea. I mean, I can come up with the usual speculation. The president is still trying, even with a piece of human scum like O'Reilly. I don't know why President Obama does that. As much as I disagree with his domestic policies and his foreign policies, now the cynic out there, I hear you, because he's just as much of a right-winger as O'Reilly. No, you're wrong on that. He's not as much of a right-winger as O'Reilly. O'Reilly, if he would have lived in the 30s, would have knee-high black patent leather boots and riding pants and a riding crop and a so-called Eisenhower-length jacket and a belt buckle with Gott mit uns written on it and a death skull on the little amulet on his military hat and a 45 caliber sidearm. And he would walk around looking for liberals and progressives and, you know, O'Reilly. I don't know why he's doing it. I really don't. I wish I were President Barack Obama's advisor. Speaking of President Obama, I got an email here. I'll share with you when we come back from Dr. Sachs. Remember him? He plays with the Count Basie band, the global globe-trotting touring band. He just got back from Japan. Sent me an email. What do you suppose he plays, Dr. Sachs? So I'll share that with you when we come back from this break. Stay with us, all right? I'm Mike Malloy.
Have you seen the little piggies crawling in the dirt? And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirt? You will find bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
Mike Malloy.
From Dr. Sachs. Mike, just giving you a shout out and saying hello. I got back from Japan on January 3rd. I've been following the Follies We Call America daily on my Big Brother screen. It might be too late for the topic, but here are my sound bites. There is use of the N-word when I'm about to write. Sorry, but I did see it used on conservative blogs in reference to the president and his wife. I've been watching the scuffle over Palin's latest Osama bin Laden-type video. I note that Sarah Palin has not held public office since quitting her governor's job 2 years ago, so the use of the flag behind her was solely meant to make her look presidential. And in addition, the use of the phrase blood libel is indefensible. As of Wednesday afternoon, she has pulled the video down from the website. We know the history of the words blood libel used by the Christians to portray horrible mistruths about the Jewish people. But more importantly, her speechwriters knew exactly what they were doing. Palin is solely responsible for the words that come out of her mouth, and no one should feel sorry for Palin. She's a big girl, and she'll feel better when she looks at her $12 million. Her choice of words is red meat for the racist part of her party. And yep, there's a serious racist part of the Republican Party who say they want to kill N-word and Jews. And if you don't believe me, just search the blogs. It's the Richard Nixon strategy all over again. Appeal to the white base and solidify them. Let's pull back a minute and let's re-examine the use of crosshairs on her website. Let's examine her statements. Don't retreat, just reload. Let's take a close look at her latest use of the phrase blood libel. And then let's decide if this is someone who does not have some responsibility in the current atmosphere, which might be inciting violence. I've seen websites saying Sarah is a Christian, and on the same blogs talking about killing Obama's gorilla N-word wife. And I've seen blogs about Jews that are vicious and full of anti-Semitism. And again, yes, most of these blogs are conservative, right-wing blogs. There's no equivalency between hate speech on the right and the left. Michael Savage, Sarah Palin, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, they've all been documented time and time again, saying just horrible things about liberals, making racist jokes, laughing about killing Muslims, joking about killing Michael Moore. Where's the equivalent talk on the left? Usually people point to one thing Howard Dean said, or one thing Barack Obama said during the campaign, or one thing they even heard a liberal talk show host say on the radio. The mouthpieces on right-wing radio and TV continue to spout racist comments and violent themes about starting a revolution. And they tell people that we have to take our country back. Back from whom? And what about the birther deception? This is the same thing. His birth was announced on the two Hawaiian papers. We've seen his birth certificate. Yet there are folks who say Obama's not American. He's other. He's different. He's a Muslim. He's not us. What does that really mean? I know what it means. He's a Negro. That's what it means. Look at him, Jed. He's a Negro. Palin has helped spread this vile imagery, and she did it during the campaign, too. She's a smart, non-intellectual woman, or she's a small, non-intellectual woman, and history will show her to be that. But I hope we don't end up with blood in the streets like we did during the 60s, but we can't keep spreading this hatred. As far as President Obama, I was deeply moved by his speech last night and his maturity and leadership. I'm proud that he is my president. Dr. Sachs, Count Basie Band. Thanks, Doc. Always good to hear from you. And from Prairie 2, the code word for attack is blood libel. Sarah Palin is under attack by the mainstream media for her being, well, Sarah Palin. But since she no longer... But since she has no defense for being Sarah Palin, she makes it an attack on all her followers, especially the paranoid, hard-right Christian Armageddon is upon us crowd. A blood libel refers to the practice of massacring Jews by accusing them of murdering children to use their blood in their satanic rituals. The message is clear. The lamestream media, quote, is trying to get the villagers incensed enough to start massacring Jews. I mean, fundamentalist Christians. Actually, Sarah Palin might think of herself as a Jew. Many of the bottom layers of Christian fundamentalism think they are the real Jews who follow Jesus, and those people who have the synagogues are fake Jews and Satan worshipers. Even more mainstream fundamentalists, everything is relative, believe fervently that Christians are routinely preyed upon by the secular majority. They believe they are the overwhelming majority, yet they are persecuted. The idea that the government will eventually start rounding them up and killing them is a basic tenet of their faith. If I worked in the liberal media, I would be concerned. Sister Sarah has told her followers that the enemy is out to get them. She has been encouraging them to be armed and prepared to fight for their lives. Now she is telling them the day of reckoning is at hand. The only thing she hasn't done is post a new target map. PrairieNumeral2.com. You know how we got here? A lot of people say, how did we get here? I'll tell you how we got here. When normal people decided they didn't need to vote anymore. When normal people felt that the country was on the right track, so why bother? When normal people failed to realize that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance and the price of sanity is the same. And what has happened now is exactly what Greg Palast predicted. We are residents of an armed madhouse. We'll be right back.
Residents of
Earth. The hour. This is the Malloy Program, and this hour is brought to you by Robin Horden and 9/11 Truth for World Peace and Justice. Robin writes, U.S. government lied to us about 9/11. Visit the World 9/11 Truth website. It is world911truth.org, and demand publicly funded elections using hand-counted paper ballots and insist on a federal voting holiday. Let's do it now. world911truth.org, and Robin asks you to please also visit ciactivism.org, ciactivism.org. The A in activism is the A in CIA. You get it? Okay. The Tea Party, of course, has burrowed into so many parts of American civics. They remember, the Tea Party's goal is to destroy America. That is their only goal. They are funded, supported, and directed by billionaires like the Koch brothers. They have no interest. Tea Partiers have no interest in justice. The Constitution to them is something that George Bush referred to as that goddamn piece of paper. Tea baggers, or tea partiers, I prefer to call them tea baggers, are traitors, they're treasonous, and eventually they will disappear. Here's an example. Republican school board in North Carolina, backed by Tea Party, abolishes integration policy. This is in Wake County, The Wake County School District, that's Raleigh. I used to live there, went to school there. Washington Post is reporting this. The Wake County School District has long been a rarity. Some of its best, most diverse schools are in the poor sections of the capital city. And its suburban schools, rather than being exclusive enclaves, include children whose parents cannot afford a house in the neighborhood. But over the past year, a new majority Republican school board backed by National Tea Party conservatives has set the district on a strikingly different course, pledging to say no to the social engineers. It has abolished the policy behind one of the nation's most celebrated integration efforts. And as the school board moves toward a system in which students attend neighborhood schools, some members are embracing the provocative idea that concentrating poor children, who are usually minorities, in a few schools could have merits. We got to keep the Negroes in the schools, inner city, and them Asians and them Mexicans. The situation unfolding in Raleigh in some ways represents a first foray of Tea Party conservatives into the business of shaping a public school system. And it has made Wake County the center of a fierce debate over the principle first enshrined in the Supreme Court's 1954 decision in Brown versus Board of Education, and that is that diversity and quality education go hand in hand. Critics accuse the new school board, the Tea Party-backed, that means billionaire-backed, right-wing neo-fascists, the new board, of pursuing an ideological agenda aimed at nothing less than sounding the official death knell of government-sponsored integration in one of the last places to promote it. Without a diversity policy in place, the critics say, the county will inevitably slip into the pattern that defines most districts across the country, where schools in well-off neighborhoods are decent, and those in poor, usually minority neighborhoods, struggle. School board chairman Ron Margiotta referred questions on the matter to the district's attorney, who declined to comment. Astonishing. A guy named Tedesco, who has emerged as the most vocal among the new majority of the 9-member board, said he and his colleagues are only seeking a simpler system in which children attend the schools closest to them. That's all. Just a very simple system. We're not racist. If the result is a handful of high poverty schools, he said, perhaps that will better serve the most challenged students. If the result is a handful of high-poverty schools, he said, perhaps that will better serve the most challenged students. Why? Quote, if we had a school that was like 80% high poverty, the public would see the challenges, the need to make it successful. Right now, we have diluted the problem, so we can ignore it, end quote. You filthy son of a bitch. The problem has been eliminated almost because it has been addressed, not ignored. God, these people are just filthy. The story unfolding in Raleigh is striking because of the school district's unusual history. It sprawls 800 square miles and includes public housing in Raleigh, wealthy enclaves near town, and the booming suburbs beyond. Home to newcomers that include many new school board members, the county is about 72% white, 20% black, 9% Latino, about 10% live in poverty. Usually, such large territories divided into smaller districts with students assigned to the nearest schools, and because neighborhoods are still mostly defined by race and socioeconomic status, poor and minority kids wind up in high-poverty schools that struggle with problems such as retaining the best teachers. Officials in Raleigh decided to head off that scenario. As white flight hit in the 70s, civic leaders merged the city and county into a single district. And in 2000, they shifted from racial to economic integration, adopting a goal that no school should have more than 40% of its students qualify for free or reduced-price lunches, the proxy for poverty. The district tried to strike this balance through student assignments and choice, establishing magnet programs in poor areas to draw middle-class kids. Although most students here ride buses to school, officials said fewer than 10% are bused to a school to maintain diversity, and most bus riders are less than 5 miles. The program has been successful. By any standard, the program has been successful. And that's why the billionaire-backed Tea Party Republicans want to destroy it. They are racists. They are anti-Semites. They are Christian fundamentalists. They want to end public education. They want to see riots in the streets. They want to see martial law declared. They want to see a poverty-stricken underclass that finally says, enough of this, goddammit, we've had enough. They're waiting for that moment. They're rubbing their hands together and licking their filthy mouths, waiting for it. This is what Beck wants, and Palin wants, and Limbaugh wants, and all of these swine. Blood.
Gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We've gotten a couple of emails here from people whose opinions I respect who say that Loeffner's Republican voter registration ID may have been photoshopped. Really doesn't matter, though, does it? Not in the big picture. It doesn't matter at all. But thanks, guys. I appreciate it. And gals. Cheryl writes, well, it seems as though the title of Greg Palast's book, Armed Madhouse, was prophetic. There's now a proposal from the Republicans for a bill in the U.S. House to allow representatives to be armed at all times, including on the floor of the House. Also, I've heard dozens of right-wing callers to progressive radio programs say that if more citizens had been carrying, they could have stopped the gunman at the Gabriel Giffords event. I fear the war has been won, and we, the sane, the intelligent, the promoters of social justice for all, have lost. I am depressed, Cheryl. No, more citizens being armed would have meant more people dead on the street. What would have prevented the gunman at the Gabriel Giffords event is very simple. Nobody in the United States can buy a gun. Of course, it's too late for this now. There are 100 million guns on the street, if that few. Nobody can buy a gun in the United States until you go through a background check, a complete and total mental, physical, criminal, background check. And then you have to have a compelling reason why you need to have one. So simple. So simple. The only people who argue otherwise are the cowards, the people who are terrified of their own shadows, right-wingers, conservatives, the loudmouth bastards who carry a gun because that's the only thing they have to try to intimidate other people. They don't have the intellectual strength. They don't have the physical strength. They don't have the moral strength. So give me a gun, I'll show you some, bitch. Look at me. I got a gun. I'm big. That's the only reason people carry guns to political rallies, for Christ's sake. Oh, my God. I'm big. The voices in my head keep telling me I'm little, but I'm big. Look, I got a gun. Ha, 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 ha. And I'll kill you. I can kill you, you know. Sick, sick, sick. What the hell are we raising a six-year-old in this country for, Kathy? I swear to God, why? Beautiful country. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. Who said that? Ah, Leonard Cohen. I may be a coward, but I got a gun. You know, Obama really pegged it, right, back during the campaign when he talked about these cowardly sons of bitches that immediately turned to their Bibles and their guns. Oh, Lord. Lord, help me. Who do I shoot first, Lord? What a mess. Well, what else we got here? I'm just stunned. Just stunned. Oh, Republicans out in Arizona are resigning. A nasty battle, it says. This is from the Arizona Republic. Nasty battle between factions of Legislative District 20 Republicans, and fears that it could turn violent in the wake of what happened in Tucson on Saturday, prompted District Republican Chairman Anthony Miller and several others to resign. Miller, a 43-year-old Ahwatukee Foothills resident and former campaign worker for Senator John McCain, was reelected to a second one-year term last month. He said constant verbal attacks after the election and internet blog posts by local members of the Tea Party made him worry about his family's safety. In an email sent hours after Saturday, these are all Republicans. In an email sent hours after Saturday's massacre in Tucson that killed 6 and injured 13, Miller told State Republican Party Chairman Randy Pullen he was quitting. He said, quote, "Today my wife of 20 years asked me, so I think that my precinct committee members will, do I think that my precinct committee members will shoot at our home? So with this being said, I'm stepping down from my position as chairman. I will make a full statement on Monday." We'll be right back. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Robin Horton. Let me turn the space heater off. And 9/11 Truth for World Peace and Justice. Robin writes, U.S. government lied to us about 9/11. Visit the World 911 Truth website. It is world911truth.org. And demand publicly funded elections using hand-counted paper ballots. Insist on a federal voting holiday. Do it now. World911truth.org. And please also visit ciactivism.org. Thanks, Robin. From Carol in Las Vegas. Mike, I've said it before, and after what happened in Tucson, I'll say it again. After the death of America, the day George W. Bush took the oath of office in January 2001, our violent path to the rise from the past of a brown shirt mentality by the right in this country is without question. I often wondered how and why the German people allowed the violent right to take over their country. Now I know, because I'm living it. The night of broken glass is coming, and we all know what happened after that. I wish I knew what to say or what to do. Carol in Las Vegas. To the phones. Blue, hey, we were just talking about you tonight. Hello, Blue? Kathy, got some volume. Blue, are you there?
Yeah, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, aren't you in Queensland?
I'm in Queensland, yes.
How are you keeping your head above water? No pun intended.
Well, we're on a gigantic sandbar called Fraser Island. In fact, it's the largest sandbar in the world.
Yeah.
But before I go any further, Mike, I wanted to tell you how deeply touched I am. I was profoundly moved, to tears almost. In fact, if we had the webcam going, you could see the tears by the tremendous outpouring of affection and love from some of your other callers and emailers. It was just very touching after my last call. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And so I wanted to return some of that love, which is one of the reasons I called back tonight. So I'm making the universal gesture, you know, both hands extended. I don't know whether can I do that on the radio, Mike. Will I be violating one of your bizarre censorship laws?
Oh, there are no censorship laws except cuss words on this program, Blue, and they're not mine. They're the FCC's.
Well, here's the love coming back at you then, folks. And I would have called sooner, but I was having nothing better to do. I was wrestling crocodiles, getting myself in training for going 10 rounds with Kay from San Francisco. Although I candidly, I suspect the Crocs would be more fun. But, you know, she really made my point for me, Mike, more convincingly than I could have done myself. At one point, she suggested I should shut up and that I had no right to speak. And it reminded me of the Dixie Chicks episode, you know, when Natalie Maines said, you know, we're embarrassed that the president's from Texas.
Right.
You remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
And all the knuckle-draggers were saying, well, no, this is America. You can think anything you like, just don't say it out loud. You know, shut up and sing. So, you know, I thought that was revealing of Kay to say that. And then earlier she'd said something in response to my...
Well, no, wait. Are you getting into a blood feud with a school teacher in San Francisco?
Well,
She just doesn't like what you said in the same manner that you don't like what Obama says. What's the problem?
Well, I just thought it was interesting that she suggested I had no right to speak and that I should shut up and
I
had the right to speak and all that.
I thought
it was revealing is all.
I don't think she was insinuating you had no right to speak. If there's one thing that she firmly believes in, my gosh, she's a school teacher, is the right of free speech. I think her point was that it's very easy to criticize from a position outside the country. It's also very easy to criticize from a position inside this country. But there is an element of, look, let me put it this way. This country right now, the United States, is going through a kind of civil war. And I don't mean civil in the sense of, nice or polite or kind. There is viciousness in this country right now that is unprecedented in my lifetime. And I'm probably older than you, and I've never seen anything like this. And you've got to understand something. There's an awful lot of Americans right now who are concerned, nervous, frightened, unsure, anxious about what's going to happen to this country. A lot of us on the so-called progressive left feel that there is a tipping point coming. And we don't know what's going to happen when that occurs. We now have people shooting our members of Congress down in the streets. And I the last time even an attempt was made that I'm aware of to shoot a congressman was back in the 50s when Puerto Rican separatists or nationalists invaded the U.S. House. And
there's been a couple of attempts on a couple of presidents since then.
Right, but I'm talking about elected representatives, U.S. House of Representatives. Oh, yeah, we look, this is a violent country. It's not, in that regard, it's not a whole lot dissimilar to Australia. The only difference between Australians and Americans is you folks don't try to shoot your leadership. You just shoot each other.
Well, I think the point I was trying to make, Mike, I think you'd probably agree with me that it was a bit bizarre hearing someone who's a self-progressed liberal telling me that, in effect, I had no right to speak and I should shut up. I mean, that sounds frighteningly like censorship to me.
Right, but what I'm trying to do is to put that in the proper context. There is context. Context is everything. I mean, and that's what I'm trying to explain to you. This country right now is in a kind of turmoil that is unbelievable. If you want to understand what it's like, don't just come here and dip your toe in the water.
Mike, I think one of the first times that I called you, I pointed out that I have lived in your country.
No, I mean now.
For an aggregate of something like 5 years.
No, but I mean right now, Blue, this is when all hell is breaking loose.
Why would I want to move there?
Well, that's my point. That's my point. If you don't want to move here, it's very difficult for you to understand the temper, the tone in this country. It's ready to goddamn explode. This country is, I'm telling you. So if you get people who are on the front lines, like a school teacher or a talk show host or a government a worker, people are on the front lines of this madness, there's going to be a sensitivity there. And I think I don't for a second believe that if you were on equal footing with Kay, in other words, if both of you were citizens of this country, and you were criticizing the president, I don't think she would have a problem. I criticize the president. She doesn't send me emails saying I should shut up. But the fact is, I'm here.
Well, one of your other callers or emailers, I forget which it was, later on pointed out, it's a bit bizarre because Blue is a citizen of the world, and the whole world is affected by what goes on. And why are we trying to make these arbitrary distinctions between who can speak and who can't?
Well, you're a smart man. You understand what I'm saying.
Well, I do, but
you've got to consider, Blue, if you want to keep this discussion to the point where it's rational, you've got to consider the context of what's going on in this country. Statements do not stand on their own anymore. Everything has triple, quadruple, quintuple meanings. Everything is clouded by the attitude and atmosphere in this country. And a lot of people in this country would find it very off-putting now. We see this country going down in flames, and we see the rise of neo-fascism. And it's very difficult, and this is all I want to say about it, it's very difficult to hear attacks on the country or the president from without when we are struggling to survive from within. And it's just difficult. That's how we're looking for allies, not adversaries. And everybody is wrong term here, but everybody's a little trigger happy. And I don't mean trigger. I mean everybody's a little touchy. And some of us are trigger happy. And there's violence afoot. There's an illness in this country. There's a fever. And eventually it's going to peak. And God only knows what's going to happen. Now let's talk about something else. I want to know what's going on in Australia. It sounds like all hell has busted loose down there, but a natural. I thought you all were having droughts, and now you're having floods.
Well, here again, it's difficult to avoid the political because it's another manifestation of global climate change.
Right. Which we in this country don't even believe is happening. All right, now let me put you on hold. I got to do a break. Let me put you on hold. Last time I put you on hold, you disappeared. Stay there. We'll be right back. Stay with us, Truth Seekers.
To everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. And a time to every purpose.
Plays that when she's been too close to the cooking sherry. Oh my God, Blue! I misspoke. There has been attack on a member of Congress. Leo Ryan, a congressman from California, was shot to death in Jonestown, Guyana.
Yeah, that's right.
During the another crazy period in this country, but that crazy period was contained.
I have a question though for you, Mike,
sure.
If I may. One of the things that attracted me and other people I know who listen to your program all around the world, because I meet people all over the world who know about you and listen to you, is your willingness to entertain all kinds of points of view.
Well, that's partially true. That's partially true.
The question I have for you is, I think if you and I sat down across the table, I don't think you'd disagree with me that most of what I've said, is substantially true. That is to say that the world is angered and terrified by what's going on in your country, and I think we have the right to speak out about it. My question is, do you think that your own objectivity is being affected by the fact that there is so much criticism of your country from outside?
No, but I think there is a tribal thing that exists in all of us, English, Australian, Rhodesia, well, not Rhodesia, Zimbabwean, American, even when we know that we're sinking into a miasma of crap and garbage and distortions and lies, we jump kind of, defensively when we hear a criticism that is not directly issue oriented. I sit here every night and criticize Obama policy regarding Guantanamo, regarding Afghanistan, regarding Iraq, regarding spying on Americans, regarding on torture policies, regarding not prosecuting the war criminals that ran this country for 8 years. That's fair. I think anybody who hears someone who's not a citizen of this country talk about that, whether you're from South America, Australia, Europe, wherever, no problem. It's a lot of people look at Obama as trying. A lot of people look at him as a man who's caught I don't happen to be one of those people to a large extent. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they get him. Maybe every new president blue is taken into a little room here in the country after he wins election one way or the other. And he's shown the Zapruder film. And then he said, and then he's told, any questions? You know, I don't know. I don't know anymore. In terms of substance, no, I don't disagree with 85-90% of what your criticisms are. They're not unique criticisms. They're criticisms that Americans hurl back and forth all the time. I mean, from liberal to liberal, from progressive to progressive. We know that we have a fascist-dominated a capitalist system here that controls or manipulates anyway just about every one of our politicians. We understand that.
Well, so
that's not the argument.
The point I should make at this point is that I'm on the air with you. I'm saying what I want to say, and as long as I continue to get on the air with you, I'll call back and I'll listen. But I'm not going to change my tone at all. I think the liberals in your country, the progressives, are impotent. I think they've done virtually nothing. I think your president's a fraud. But I think the fact that I'm on the air saying this at least confirms that you as an American, as a talk show host, haven't completely lost your objectivity, and I appreciate that.
Oh, well, thank you.
I think you had a question for me, though, or you wanted to talk about something else, so feel free.
I just wanted to know, honestly, wanted to know what is going on in Queensland.
Well, look, one of the things I follow along with politics and crocodile wrestling is, you know, global weather patterns. And when we were in Oregon not long ago, in Portland, as a matter of fact, they were talking about, you know, the interruption of normal weather patterns there in the northwest of the United States. And we've seen this in South America. When we were down there, there were all kinds of weird things going on in different parts of South America in terms of the weather, unseasonal weather in different parts of the continent. So, and there are cyclical things that go on in Queensland, by the way, and Northern Territories. If you pay attention to Australian climate and weather over 100 years or so, am I still on? I can't tell. Hello?
Yeah. I'm here.
At any rate, because I'm getting some weird things on my end, there are some cyclical things that go on in Queensland that that partially explain this, but not entirely, because there are a lot of unusual things going on that I'm sure must be attributable to global climate change. So I don't know what to say about it. It's not my field, really.
Right. Well, absolutely. No, I know your field is going after American liberals, right?
Well, that's my hobby.
Mark. That's your hobby. Okay.
I'm just a quiet, mild-mannered, inoffensive bloke from Queensland trying to do the best he can, Mike.
Right.
So, you know.
All right, Blue. Listen, we're coming up on the top of the hour break. Thanks for checking in. Good to hear from you. Take care, okay? All right. Keep your head up. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Old Blue, he sure does speak his mind, doesn't he? Well, if Kay Petrini is listening, or she usually listens when she runs in the morning, I think she said. What was I going to say? Oh, well, this will get her pulse rate up tomorrow for sure. Oh, well. I don't think folks should take some of the comments that Blue says, though, quite as seriously. We've got so much crap going on in this country right now. To the phones. Ellen is near Nashville, listening online. Hey, Ellen.
Well, hi, Mike.
Well, hi, Ellen.
Well, thanks so much for taking my call. I've been listening to you since my husband first heard you back in IE America days.
Oh, my God. That's a different lifetime.
Well, it is, and I'm not much of a phone caller because I've never had the nerve. I feel uncomfortable calling, but guess what? Blue made me do it, and it's because I have to defend Blue.
You have to.
I think he needed to.
You have to. You have to defend Blue.
Well, let me say this, Mike.
All right.
I think the unvarnished truth, as he tells it, and as people sometimes do on what's it called, Washington Journal on C-SPAN, that morning show. I watched it for years and years. It's gotten so ridiculous because it's gone so far right. It's not a show that's a staple so much of mine, mm-hmm. but I catch it every now and then. And I'll tell you, whenever anyone even bothers to call, see, that's dropped to nothing from overseas calls. They rarely take them now.
Mm.
They were just shocked at us in so many ways. And a few people would get on it and sort of blow the door off, you know, really just say it, and you'd see the host expression was, you know, whatever, and the other people would get in and sort of, it's none of your business. Well, they would call, and they would get defensive. But I think we need to hear it. I think, and you're not one of them, thank goodness. I've listened to you religiously. But some of these hosts are either afraid of this administration, to my mind, or they tiptoe around for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean you. But I have to say, if it weren't for you, Mike, you're one of the few who allow a Blue or someone like me who agrees with him, or let's just say people who don't want to just be real polite that everything is great in the Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
when it's really not, you know, to my mind. I mean, it's gone so far right and so corporatist is what I'm trying to say, which I think is what Blue has mainly said. When I've heard him over the years, you know, several years anyway, I've heard of Blue, I think that's all he's getting at. We need to wake up if we don't realize that, and I know you realize it, and I know I do. I think some well-meaning callers really don't quite see things clearly, though, I must say.
I think part of the problem, Ellen, is that the liberal left dropped the ball decades ago. The Democratic Party dropped the ball decades ago. They were totally intimidated 30 years ago by this Hollywood actor who pretended, he played a role, he thought it was in a movie, Ronald Reagan, where he was the President of the United States. And I think an awful lot of otherwise reliable Democrats were seduced and willing to be seduced because times were rough back in the 80s. I don't know how many people remember. Ronald Reagan was a spendthrift. He layered all kinds of tax increases on the American public. But because he was a Hollywood actor, he was handsome. He was smooth. He was slick. He was soothing. He had a big grin. It was always morning in America, you know, back when people really wanted to hear that. And had a great smile. And, you know, and a lot of people in this country on the otherwise reliable Democratic side were seduced, and they came up with these crazy so-called Reagan Democrats. And meanwhile, the activists in the Democratic Party, we were busy organizing against nuclear waste and nuclear energy and nuclear power. We were organizing and lobbying against the police state that was starting to develop within within the U.S. government. And nobody paid too much attention to organizing Democrats to continuing to support the union movement. And the most grievous thing that the left did, or not the left, but the Democrats did, they stopped voting. Because like I said earlier tonight, a lot of people came to the conclusion at some point that the social safety net had been so well constructed 40 years before Ronald Reagan took office, 45 years before Ronald Reagan took office, that there was no need to fight to maintain it, that it was so much a part of the American structure that it would never disappear. And back in the day, there was still a trust that corporate America would do the right thing. You know, it was only 35 years ago that the average CEO made 30 times the average shop worker, not 400 times or 1,000 times. So, you know, but Democrats stopped voting. Oh, it's cold out. Oh, it's raining. Oh, I don't know. I can't get it. Well, I didn't go. In the meantime, the neo-fascists, even 30 years ago, the ones who are all dead now, for the most part, were busily organizing. They started organizing after Barry Goldwater was tossed on the trash heap of history. And they started organizing not just politically, but economically. They started very subtly changing the color of this country, the financial color, the emotional color. In the 50s, we had the Red Scare. In the 60s and 70s and 80s, there was still a Red Scare. But, I mean, you know, Gorbachev was someone that Ronald Reagan could have a drink with and talk about ending nuclear weaponry. But the Democrats got slack. And the Republicans, the hard right Republicans, the neocons, the fascists, continue to organize. Fascists always continue to organize, whether it's in South America or Europe or the Middle East or Asia. It doesn't make any difference. Fascists never stop organizing, ever. They may go underground like the snakes and worms and cockroaches that they are, but they continue to organize. And when they finally do burst out of their mud holes, they have an entire structure that will support them. And the Democrats got lax. The Democrats didn't pour millions and millions and millions of dollars back when that was real money into so-called think tanks. We didn't pour it into publications. We didn't have people buying networks, television, radio networks. We were too stupid, too relaxed, too unconcerned, too I've got mine, Jack, you know, or I'm struggling, or I can't pay attention to that nonsense now, or I played, you know, I paid my dues in the 60s or the 70s or whenever. So, I mean, come on. When the coup finally occurred, and it occurred, was it December 12th, 2000? Was that when the Supreme Court ended representative government in this country forever? And what happened when the United States was turned over to criminals? Nothing.
Yeah, in the American way, you must give and I share.
Okay, now he's gone and got one of my ethics advisors pissed off. Uh-oh. Bridget writes, aw, did he get his little feelings hurt? It's not the content. It's the imperious, patronizing, judgmental tone. He's welcome to say what he wants to say, but so is Kay and anyone else who has a response to it. What, he can call us fraud, impotent, whatever he wants, and we can't say what we think of that? Sounding a bit like Sister Sarah to me. He doesn't live here. He has a point of view that we can't have because he's looking from the outside in. And furthermore, I get that he has a different point of view because he is a, quote, man of the world, unquote. And I always find it interesting to see how events and processes in this country are viewed from outside. We on the inside sometimes agree, sometimes, because we are absorbed in the middle of it, have a different point of view. What makes me crazy with Blue is his insistence that anyone who is inside the system and sees it differently because of what, because that, I can't get this sentence, Bridget. In other words, his view is the correct one. I don't hear him saying what it looks like from outside is, or acknowledging that he doesn't really get what it's like on the inside. After all, he visits his friends in Portland and drinks fine wines. I'm sorry, he's an effete, self-important snob. And, yes, I get pissed off. After working my bloody ass off on a pretty constant basis, attempting to make change, mostly at a local level, because that's the only place I don't feel impotent, I get pissed off being told by a literal jet setter who likes to talk a lot, but from what I can see does nothing to bring about change, that I'm deluded, impotent, ignorant, whatever the hell other patronizing, judgmental term he wants to throw around. Can you say full-blown narcissistic personality disorder? And I wish you would apply some of the same challenges to him that you do to flying monkeys. Bridget.
Uh-oh.
Well, all I can say about that, Bridget, is, you know, usually I don't challenge the flying monkeys. I hang up on them, if you're referring to callers. But I kind of find Blue entertaining in a very perverse kind of way. And I figure that you, Bridget, and Kay, and other people that find him offensive, for whatever reason, you are all outspoken, erudite, capable of busting somebody's ass when you feel like it, and you all do a good job of it. So my thing is to let him talk. And then rely on you, Bridget, or Kay, or anyone else who is as well-spoken and can write as well as you folks do, to take him apart. And I think that's, like I say, if someone ever raised a hand to you people, I would probably shoot them. But if somebody, you know, wants to engage in a verbal joust, I figure you guys are, you women are well equipped to handle it. But I still get a little bit nervous when my ethics advisor says, I wish you'd apply some of the same challenges to him that you do the flying monkeys. Woo! I'm sorry! Time out! Time out! Oh, that's scary. I've had radio stations drop the program. That doesn't upset me as much as when my ethics advisor says, all right, listen here. That's why she and Bob Alexander are the ethics advisors. All right. What? Phone call. Yes. Joe is in San Diego, listening on XM. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
All right, listen, you need to get on a different phone because we can't hear you. It's too hard to hear what he said. Did you hear what he said? I had no idea. So, wait a minute. Here we go. Susan is in Sunny Squim.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Susan.
Hey, listen, I kind of get where you're coming from with Blue because he is excellent radio.
Yeah.
But as somebody from the chat room, I have to kind of take issue with Blue. I used to be a big fan of Blues, and I know I've called in and said I was a big fan of Blues in the past, as you can recall.
Right.
But it seems here lately he's kind of turned on us like a snake. You know, I, too, am an activist. I've gone out and I've worked at the local level.
Hey,
and
Susan, hold on. I got to do a break. Hold on just a second. Let me put you all. We'll come right back. We let the time get away from us. Play the music, Gabby.
We've got to show you all of the things I was on the inside. I pretend to be
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This is the Malloy Show. All right, back to Susan in Sunny Squim, Washington.
Hi, Mike. Say, thanks for taking my call and keeping me on hold.
Sure.
The thing with Blue is not that what he says is so wrong. Your ethics advisor is right, but he was very condescending. And the problem is, we're not the people he should be riling against. We didn't put us here. We've been trying to fight these people, but we don't have money. We're just working blokes here trying to get the country right. In 2008, we worked our asses off. We campaigned. We got Democrats on the local level in and progressives that what we thought were Democrats, what we thought were progressives. And they got to Washington. They sold out to big business. How can we compete with the billions of dollars that are pouring in that have bought our government? The Supreme Court sold out, as you pointed out earlier, to Blue way back when Bush came elected. Our Supreme Court is a paid and bought court, at least five of them, and that's all it takes.
Right.
I have no idea how to fight this thing. None of us do, and we're so frustrated. So then some Aussie, cocky Aussie, comes over here, jets in on his plane, and tells us we're stupid and not fighting and lazy and not working to get our government right, and oh boy, don't we look stupid. Well, you know what? That's going to piss some people off.
Sure. Of course it
and
is.
And that's what that whole angst is about. It's he hit with his criticism just at the time when we're down the most.
Well, I think that's the reason there's such a visceral reaction.
Right.
But I think you also will agree, Susan, that the so-called left in this country has disappeared. It's evaporated.
Oh, yes, it has.
There's just nothing there anymore putting up any kind of resistance. A. B. It doesn't have to be that way. There's still enough institutional memory in the justice, the peace and justice movement to explain to the younger people how we got here and how we on the so-called liberal left allowed this to happen. And we did. I realize we've all been working. We've all been having children or fighting for rights, whether it's for poor people or physically challenged people or working in the anti-nuke movement. And And the one thing we didn't do, we didn't raise our eyes up a bit. We did have our eyes to the ground and working on things that seemed to be very necessary, but we didn't look up and see that overarching everything was this move toward pure, simple fascism.
Corporate fascism.
Right, gangster capitalism that has now got such a death grip on this country. So what I find offensive...
I watched it ooze in, Mike. I mean, I've been working for environmental causes for 40 years. I lived in Alaska for a long time. No jokes, please.
No.
And I watched when the oil patch came in and just bought the place.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, just totally took it over. And we fought, we tried, but we were beating our heads against the wall.
Well, there is no...
They flooded our media, and they've given... They say, here, have an Xbox, have a Wii, forget about this, don't look at that man behind the curtain. Just play, just keep going, just ignore us.
Well, there's no equivalent on the left to the oil industry that has, of course, it took legislation to do it, but the oil industry did not fight to pay every single Alaskan citizen a piece of the action for turning their country over to the oil industry. And there is no equivalent on the left that can deal with that. We can't say to people, look, wake up, fight for your democracy. Oh, by the way, here's $4,000 a year for your efforts.
The permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend, and I'd love to sit down and talk with you about this sometime because I was very involved in it, was actually a liberal agenda to keep the oil companies, to keep the state of Alaska from stealing the public money, because the oil belonged to the state.
Okay, a liberal, I think there's an example of the liberals in Alaska slicing a knife slowly across their own throats.
Yeah, in the end, that's what it turned out.
But
that's not what it started out to be, and I'd love to go in with you sometime, but not tonight, of course.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Susan, and what the people who are critical of Blue's statements. In fact, on a lot of the points that he brings up are points that you hear me say. The difference is, and I think this is true, is that there is kind of a gratuitous criticism rather than, this is what I was trying to get across to him. You know, you're not here. You don't understand what's going on inside this country. You can, you can fly over, you can land, you can visit with friends, but you don't really know the struggle that's going on here. And I think that's what a lot of people are finding offensive about what he's saying. So.
Right. He understands the vitriol on the right because they're so loud and vocal, but what he doesn't understand is the frustration and the hopelessness and the helplessness that those of us on the far left feel.
Yeah, yeah.
We feel like we're hitting our heads against the wall and that people that we love are not understanding what's going on, are standing there listening to Rush Limbaugh like zombies.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, listen, thanks, Susan.
Yeah, bye.
All right, we'll talk later. Thanks a lot. Take care. Well, at least he stimulates conversation. Right? Don is in Vancouver, British Columbia. Hey, Don.
Hey, Mike. You know, I just want to rant. I just feel these people complaining about Blue are such wussies. And, you know, I don't get why they complain about Blue, but they don't complain about you or why they even listen to you for that matter.
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, it just, you know, I don't, as you stated, your message has been, is pretty much what Blue states. I just don't get these, you know, they think that, you know, oh, we just, you know, speak peaceful to each other and sweet to each other. I don't get it. I don't get it why he doesn't have a say. you know, in what goes, not saying what goes on in America, but, you know, why his opinion isn't any more valid.
Well, there's a very essential, elemental reason. Let me ask you something. Are you part of a family, Don? Do you live with other people? You have a spouse, children, parents?
Partner.
What? Okay.
Partner.
All right. You have intimate relationships with family, correct? By intimate, I mean emotional, close relationships with people in your family, whether it's your partner or your parents or cousins or whatever. It exists, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Let's suppose that one of your family members turns out to be a real jackass. I mean, I don't mean criminal acts, but just starts being just a prick. You know what I mean? Just doing stuff that is crappy. And the rest of the family is going, oh, my God, you know, why doesn't he or she stop this? I mean, you know, being a smart ass and maybe gets busted for petty theft or likes to smoke around the nieces and nephews or whatever. Just a real jerk. And the other family members start talking about this guy or this woman and saying, you know, I wish you would go away. Okay, so you have that problem inside your family. Now let's suppose you bring a new friend, not a family member, a friend into your circle. And your friend says, you know, I hate to say this, but your sister there is a real creep. I mean, look at her behavior. She got busted for stealing a pair of gloves. She smokes around the kids. You know, she's got a drink in her hand half the time. What a jerk. How do you guys deal with her? I think your first reaction, Don, would be to say, hey, what are you talking about? That's my sister, goddammit. You understand what I'm saying there?
No, I understand.
Okay.
Understand you, Mike.
And I think that's the visceral reaction that people have in this country when Blue calls. It's not that they so much disagree with the essential part of the criticism. I mean, I still have a lot of listeners who don't like my position on Obama, but still feel a little bit queasy about some of the stuff he does. But it's the outsider thing. That's all.
When I hear that, Mike, it reminds me of the right wingers, and it reminds me
well,
of the
course
right-wingers.
Well, of course it does. If somebody were to step into your family and say your sister is a whore because she's doing all this and doing that, you'd probably punch him in the mouth. Even though you may think the same thing, you may talk to your partner, why is she such a whore? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I listen to you because you don't sugarcoat things. And
well, I don't sugarcoat Blue either.
Yeah, and I guess I'm one of the few folks that appreciate that, your stance and
all right.
Blue's opinion.
Well,
so.
I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate you checking in, Don, all right?
Fair enough. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care. We'll be right back. Before the hour, William is calling from Toledo. Hey, William.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
I'm doing all right here. I just got an email from the Human Rights Campaign here, and I haven't heard any of this in mainstream media, but supposedly New Hampshire is looking to undo their legislation for gay marriage.
Really?
Yes. I've looked up on the Concord Monitor. It says that this effort is led by the Family Research Council. You know, those idiots.
You're right.
In Washington, and they said that they would do whatever it takes to repeal gay marriage in New Hampshire.
Do you know anything about the political makeup of the New Hampshire legislature?
It says in here that the Republicans have taken over the legislature there, as well as in 20 other states. And it goes on to mention that states such as Indiana, Minnesota, New Mexico, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Iowa, and West Virginia are also considering similar legislation.
Well, if, you know, so many states did wind up with a fascist majority in their legislative branch, and if that's happened in New Hampshire, then, yeah, there will definitely be an effort. What the right-wingers, what the neo-fascists, and that certainly includes these murder clowns in the Family Research Council, what they're about is destroying civil rights, human rights, and certainly for gay folk, for people of color, for minorities. The battle is on. I don't know if people are starting to wake up even now. This last election put the U.S. House in control of the fascists. I mean, total control. There are an awful lot of Democrats who are fascists, too. But these people, the Republicans, are out and out. They're out of the closet fascists. And put a number of state houses in the control of the fascists. So the agenda is not to govern. The agenda is to begin the destruction, all the destruction that is necessary to move this country back to a place where human rights was something on the far horizon, where civil rights was something on the far horizon. So, you know, whether we like it or not, William, the battle is on. There's no Fort Sumter unless it was December 12th, 2000, when the Supreme Court turned the entire nation over to the fascists. But what to do about it? Well, we're going to have to, I guess, organize, see how serious the threat is. I'm not trying to be funny with that. See how serious the threat is, and once we're sure that it's real serious, then action. And action on whatever level we decide is necessary, I guess. I mean, we've done it before. We can certainly do it again.
Right.
I'll check that. I'll check out the story and see if see what I can find. I'm sure.
Yeah. Did you want me to? I can forward an email or something.
If you have a link to what you read in the newspaper. Yeah, just send it to mike@mikemalloy.com. I'd appreciate it, William.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
No problem. Take care.
You too. You know, a lot of folks on the real left in this country, have been wondering for a long time what it would take to wake us up. I'm not talking about the liberal left. I mean the real left. And we have contributors to this program with emails and points of view and essays and so on and so forth who are there, who are on the real left. Not the totalitarian left, the democratic left, but it's the real left. The liberal left is valid and necessary, but the real left in this country are the shock troops, I guess. Mario Savio, I mentioned his name earlier this week, he was on the real left. The people who put together the Port Huron Statement in the early 60s were on the real left. I think Jerry Brown at one time, the once and now governor of California, was on the real left. But the people on the real left in this country have been, and I read what they send to me. What is it going to take to wake people up as to what is happening? It's this slow process. It's what the German pastor Niemöller wrote about decades ago. You know, the slow disappearance of this group and that group. And no, we're not in this country yet to the point where they're taking people away in boxcars. But what is it going to take? Is it going to take some overt act of violence? What occurred in Tucson, that was not overt enough. The man is insane. Oh, okay. What is it going to take? I wonder that myself sometimes. It's very scary to me because I know that if we ever do wake up, this country is going to convulse. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.